You want to make your fantasy sports league more than a fantasy? Then you need Trophy Smack.
It's the number one store for fantasy and tournament trophies, belts, draft boards, loser awards, and other ridiculous products.
Trophy Smack is more than just a trophy company with outstanding customer service and products. It's the very essence and heart of every fantasy league. And if you click now, TrophySmack.com gives you free shipping, a free loser poster, and can have the hardware to you in a few days, bragging rights included. Go to TrophySmack.com right now and take your fantasy league to the next level.
What's up, and welcome to the Dynasty Happy Hour with your hosts, Doug Eddy, Tim Keller, and Tyler Gunther. Bring us all inside the huddle. Whether it's in-season or off-season, this is your spot for the best and in-depth Dynasty fantasy football advice. So let's not waste any more time and get right to it with Doug, Tim, and Tyler with another Dynasty Happy Hour.
Welcome back to the Dynasty Happy Hour. It's another week with me, I'm Doug, Tim, and Tyler, and we have a special guest on this week. One of the Dynasty dummies himself, it is our friend of the show, fellow New Englander. You're always welcome here. It's Zach Reed. Zach, how's it going?
It's great, Doug. It's good to be here. Fantastic to be in the midst of rookie season and starting to dig into that sort of thing. It's my favorite time of year. So it's good to be here with you guys and chopping it up.
I thought you were going to say in the midst of a global pandemic, and I was going to drive up to Maine and slap you.
No, it's fantastic being in a pandemic.
So what?
I mean, like, I'm really confused. I'm antisocial, but like not to that extent.
I'm not quite sure what you're talking about. There hasn't really been much going on at all from 2019 to 2021. Really boring, actually.
No, it's been pretty normal.
Yeah,
pretty normal stuff. These whole masks on the face.
I agree with Zach. For folks that are antisocial, like Zach, like myself. Even the most antisocial of us at some point go, come on, I just want to go out and do stuff.
But I'll tell you, having the government mandate that says I can't go visit my mother-in-law has been absolutely beautiful.
I enjoy my mother-in-law's company. Yeah.
Oh, Doug, she probably doesn't listen. You don't need to say that.
She doesn't know what a podcast is, Tyler. It's fine. So this week, we're brought to you by Trophy Smack. As always, make sure to use code DHHRING in the store. So if you need a trophy because you've been a slacker and you're like, you know what, I need a trophy for this guy that won the league and I haven't done it yet, there's still plenty of time. You can get a trophy, a championship belt, a gangsta grill for your champion. And if you use code DHHRING, you'll get a free $60 championship ring and they'll ship it right to you. They were recently featured on Shark Tank. Much credit to Tyler. We were one of the first places to advertise for Trophy Smack. So really, it's about us. Like, we made it happen, so you're welcome. You know, we got you Mark Cuban. It's cool. You know, no worries. You know, I would love to see what these belts look like, but Tyler hasn't been to the post office yet, so I'm waiting on my shipment, my friend, Trophy Smack that has my name on it.
You know, up here in Minnesota, we had an air thing. Like, legit, we couldn't go outside because the air was like super polluted today for some reason because the winds
were
going.
Give these people air.
It was weird. And I'm like, okay, what else is going to happen? But no, I have not made it to the post office. I need to do so to get you your belt. It's got
the
your name on
you
it.
The longer you wait is the longer you wait, the less time I have with it.
And the less I have to clean it.
I'll let it collect dust on the man cave. It's fine. Just get it to me. God's sake. So yeah, make sure you use code DHHRING. Awesome website. You can customize, do all sorts of fun stuff, and they're Shark Tank approved. All right, this week we are here to talk about the rookie running backs. Last week we hit you up with quarterbacks with John Helmkamp. This week we've
speaking
got
of quarterbacks,
running backs. Yes, that's right. I was going to get there. Don't you worry. Ginger, stop.
Whoa.
Just because your brother got traded. Because your brother got traded doesn't mean you can interrupt me. Let the host. If you don't want me here, I'll go. It's fine.
You know,
just let me do my job.
I should have posted in like a different backdrop from like a hotel room acting like I was Carson Wentz or something like that. Like had like a bunch of Colts gear on me.
That would have been perfect.
That'd be expensive.
Yes,
though. I mean, I'd have to rent out a hotel room.
That's all you need.
Before we get to the 2021 running backs, my intention was to cover this news of a quarterback getting traded from Tim's Eagles to, I don't know, name Colts fan here, John Helmkamp, his Colts. He was a fan of them last week. So now they have Carson Wentz. They gave up some picks that have conditional escalators that can get them a couple of first-round picks based on Carson Wentz's snap percentage and game started and all that jazz, blah, blah, blah. But on paper, it looks like a second and a third, more or less, for Carson Wentz. So, Tim, I'm going to give this one to you first because you've seen Carson Wentz's whole career as an Eagles fan. What was your initial take seeing Wentz go from the Eagles, where he obviously didn't have a future, I didn't think, because of what happened last year? But now he goes to the Indianapolis Colts, which to me seems like a pretty dang good fit. Frank Wright, good line, good weapons on the offense. Give me your analysis on Carson Wentz to the Indianapolis Colts.
Well, if there's a team out there that looks more similar to the 2018 Eagles than the 2021 Indianapolis Colts, I'd like to hear an argument for him. Good young defense, some offensive weaponry, and they're still young too. You know, the Eagles in 2018, they had some offensive weaponry. Some of them guys were getting a little older, and we've seen, you know, Alshon in a few short years is essentially just done now.
Evaporated.
I did not. If you go back to when the Eagles were drafting Carson Wentz, I had Tyler talking me off the ledge. I didn't like what they were doing to begin with. You know, they dropped a lot of value and a lot of picks to move up to get him to begin with. I didn't think at the time it was a great move. He did play very well. I did grow to become a fan of Carson Wentz and his style there in Philadelphia. But yeah, this past year was extremely rough to watch. They paid him a year early, which I think is going to teach some GMs around the league maybe a lesson or two. You might not see those early contracts get paid out. Goff, Wentz, those sort of things. But nobody else was going to take him with that money. So what they got was that's the best you're going to get, essentially, with the money. The Eagles are still going to pay him. I believe it's $33 million this year on the dead cap. It's the third-round pick this year, the conditional second next year. If he plays 75% of the snaps and make the playoffs, that moves to a one.
So it's probably a one. So I mean, I think we can probably be comfortable saying it's a one.
I mean, the Titans will be a runner for the playoffs. But, yeah, the Colts should be able to work their way in, especially with that seventh team now in the playoffs. So, you know, I'll count it as a one for now, unless something bad happens. But if there is a coach out there that's going to fix Carson Wentz, and I believe most of it is a mental issue more than it is a mechanical issue. He's just got to get behind the line, build some trust, stop seeing ghosts, stop rushing himself in the pocket. His internal clock was on scramble mode every dang on snap this past season because that line was not giving him more than 2.5 seconds. So, you know, hopefully he gets into some sort of camp with the Colts. They can prove to him that they're going to be able to protect him for 3 to 5 seconds. He can start to settle himself down, and we can see the Carson Wentz of old come back.
Before I hand off to Tyler and Zach on Carson Wentz, what do you think? Do you think the Eagles go with Jalen Hurts in the future? There's been a lot of buzz around the number six pick that they are potentially interested in a quarterback. I think, you know what? Go with Hurts. He's on a rookie deal. He showed some promise. To me, he looked like a young Russell Wilson in the times that he did play last year. Obviously, he's a rookie. He's going to make mistakes, too. But what do you think the probability is that the Eagles take a quarterback at six, or do you think Hurts is the guy?
What my honest opinion on this is most of that rumor mill stuff I've been hearing has been from outside of the Philadelphia region. Not a ton of the beat reporters are saying this.
Okay.
So I would say that it's like a 30-70 that they're going to take a quarterback. I think they stick with Hurts. But we all know this league is built around that quarterback position. If they don't truthfully believe in Jalen, then you have to take another shot at the quarterback, which is going to, you know, Fields might be there. You know, Zach Wilson might be there, Trey Lance. I don't love the prospect of them taking another quarterback there. I think there's plenty of other needs on that team that they need to address and see what you can get out of Jalen, give him another couple years. But I'm not the GM.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was looking at Twitter about these rumors, and they had Eagles are really interested in Trey Lance, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, Trey Lance I think has a slightly better arm, but what's the difference between the players? I think Hurts might be more athletic than him, but the difference in the arm isn't that far. So if you, I honestly think it's just a bunch of smoke. They're trying to possibly trade back because they need to build. They have tons of pieces they need to get, and I think they are really looking to move back.
Yeah, I think this Wentz situation, him getting traded to Indianapolis, has opened a very unique situation for Jalen Hurts owners in Dynasty. It's very much a 50-50. Like, I'm going to hold this guy and hope he gets a starting job. But if they pick a QB at six, he's worthless.
Yeah.
Like, so what do you do? Zach, if you've got Jalen Hurts on a team, and maybe you get an offer for, it's a super flex this year, you get an offer for a first-round pick. Are you taking that deal, or are you holding out hope that Hurts is the guy?
Now, where are we talking about? What? How?
Let's
high
say
a first?
It's 105. 105. Sure.
105. I probably will take, because I think that you probably can get a starting quarterback with that, and then you have a guarantee of a starting quarterback. The thing I will say though is I really liked Jalen Hurts coming out last year. I love what he did, even though it wasn't as productive for the Eagles. In fantasy, you watch what he did, and you're like, okay, he's got the ability to move, not only move the pocket, but move down the field with his legs. He's got that rushing upside. But he also threw the ball better than a lot of people thought he was going to. And again, I don't mean any offense to him, but the Eagles' receiving core was pig spit. Like, it was terrible. And to be able to move the ball in situations where Carson Wentz couldn't, and we've seen Carson Wentz be a good quarterback, but not be able to effectively move the pocket the way Hurts did. Mm-hmm. Like, I really love that skill set. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not getting a pick where I think I can get one of these, because they're probably going to be, what do we say, four or five quarterbacks go in the first round this year, mm-hmm. something like that. I've seen
probably
pretty close to that. If they're going in the first round, you're probably getting a starter. And so I wouldn't be hedging my bets on that is something that I don't mind doing. But if I'm anywhere below that where I can't get a quarterback is going to be more valuable in Superflex than any of these skill position players that you're going to be able to draft, especially if Hurts ends up taking that job. I don't mind it as a hedge, but I really like Hurts as a player.
Yeah, I do too. I saw a lot of Russ Wilson in his game, and that's what, just seeing him play, I was like, man, he looks like Russell Wilson out there. Like, I know that's lofty goals, right? But I could see it.
In college, I thought he played a lot closer to like Cam Newton, because he doesn't run like Russell Wilson, where like Wilson will get out of the pocket and then go. I think you can design runs for Hurts. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden you've got this ability to play that RPO and have him take a ball up the middle for, 10 or 15 yards, mm-hmm. where I don't necessarily see Russell Wilson as that type. But having that, having that ability, having that rushing upside is huge. I mean, look at the quarterbacks right now that you want on your rosters in fantasy. Are guys who run the ball. It's Josh Allen. It's
Konami Jackson.
It's I mean, exactly. And so he does that.
You need that BB plus athlete in the quarterback room. Otherwise, it's just so tough for Stafford's, Eli Manning's. Yeah. Tom Brady has an all-star cast around him, and a very good defense. But if you're just that, statuesque quarterback, it is so tough to win nowadays. Big Ben now at his advanced age.
Yeah, Tyler, what were you going to say? I didn't mean to cut you off, but you know what? Touche.
I honestly forgot what I was going to say, but I will.
Even better.
I will speak to what Carson. You know what? I will speak to what Carson Wentz said. Earlier on this season, I traded 109 and some future assets for Carson Wentz before he got traded, in the hopes he went to Indy. Now, where would you guys value Carson Wentz in a super flex league? Where would you take him now that he's with Indy, Frank Reich? You got a beast of an offensive line. He's playing indoors, which I think is a bigger thing than people think. He's going to be playing indoors in Indy. Where would you guys have him in this rookie draft for picks? Zach?
Somewhere, I think I'd take him 103. I mean, just because you've seen him with a good team around him. You've seen him with Frank Reich. You've seen him with, some of the pieces. Even Trey Burton is now over there in Indy.
Oh, yeah, that's
and,
right, yeah.
And you've got a pretty good tight end group over there. You've got Paris Campbell, who I really like coming back off injury. You've got
Michael Pittman.
Pittman, yeah. And so like you've got a really nice. Plus you've got Jonathan Taylor, who's obviously a really good bell cow type running back. You've got the other. You've got Nyheim Hines coming out of the backfield to make plays. You've got a great offensive line. So they just spent picks to go get him, where a lot of people were thinking it was going to be similar to the Goff deal, mm-hmm. where Philadelphia was going to actually have to give up picks. You know, it's that Osweiler thing where you're like, all right, you take him, take the contract, and we'll give you picks to do that. And Philadelphia didn't. Philadelphia actually got back a pretty good return. So it seems to me like Indy is going into this thinking Wentz is going to be the starter. You saw what Rivers did last year there.
Yeah.
There's nothing in my mind that says Wentz can't be that effective.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And like going back to what Tim said, I think a lot of it was mental with Wentz. We hear stories that Peterson and him didn't talk for months at a time. That's not good when you and your coach are not speaking. That's not a good thing. And I think him and Frank Reich have a really good connection. And honestly, right when Frank Reich left is when Wentz started kind of dwindling down. And his confidence was shattered. So I love it. And if you could still go get Wentz for a good price, I would recommend that fully.
Yeah, I was going to say about 2 months ago, we were doing some players to buy. And I think my guy was Carson Wentz back then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with Zach, right in that 103, 104 range. Again, because you saw what he can do. Mm-hmm. And he's played at an MVP caliber level when he had confidence and good pieces around him. So why not? Like, I know rookie fever hits, right? And people are like, I want the Shiny rookie. He went in the first round. Give him to me. I'm like, you know, I'll take Carson Wentz. He'll be just fine. And at least I know what I have, and it's consistent.
Yeah, rookie fever has the same symptoms as COVID, so watch out for it. It's almost very similar.
Yes. You can lose your smell, lose your taste, all those fun
things. Yep. Vision, all that.
Yes. So let's move the conversation to our running backs. That's why we are here today. So I am going to go over, Zach recently tweeted his top 12 running backs in the 2021 class. So you know what? We're going to sit down. We're going to talk about it. So I'm going to go over Zach's top 12 running backs here and then kind of let Tyler and Tim talk it out. I'm going to sit back and watch and learn and just enjoy myself and keep the conversation moving. So I'm ready to go. Zach, are you ready?
Always.
I do want to say something. Tim and Zach.
Of course you do.
Tim and Zach are my two favorite film watchers of their notes. Their notes given that they have on players are great. They're amazing. They're like, you should have to pay for this. And I have started I have a little notebook now, and I've tried to do the same as these two. So I'm going to look absolutely terrible in these notes compared to these two. Like, I'm going to look like Brock Osweiler compared to Aaron Rodgers. Like, these two are Hall of Fame at notes. And I'm just like a guy just hoping to be somebody compared to these two. So this is going to be fun yet depressing.
Nice. All right. Well, let's kick it off. So Zach's got his number one running back in the 2021 class is out of North Carolina. There's a couple of them on this list. Very talented backfield. But number one is Javonte Williams from North Carolina. Been getting a lot of Twitter buzz as of late. Going to be real interesting to see what his draft stock looks like here in April. So, Zach, you've got him at 101, which I've seen him in a few places. People have him as the RB1. What, watching the tape and everything, what swayed you to move Javonte Williams to the number one running back in 2021?
Now, full disclosure, he and Najee Harris are film graded exactly even for me. But the things that kind of give the edge to Javonte Williams are his ability to pass block, because I think he is absolutely fantastic in that area. In fact, he was in third down situations a lot more than Michael Carter was, and Carter was the pass-catching back, the pass-catching back in quotation marks, at North Carolina. And the other part that I really love about him is his vision. And Javonte Williams is that prototypical size. I mean, he's 5'10", 220. Like, he's a banger. And you hear people talk about him, and you know, he runs like he's a linebacker. Well, he was. He was a linebacker in high school. That's what he did. And so he's not afraid to stick his nose in it. When he gets between the tackles, he's got that great vision. He runs ferociously. He gets his pad level really low and sheds tacklers that way. And he doesn't necessarily seek out contact, which was something that with John Kelly a couple years ago, that mm-hmm. really got us in trouble because that
fantasy
was
fantasy Voldemort,
like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you watch him and you're like, oh, yeah, he's going out of his way to just crush people, you know, and all of a sudden that didn't play because in the NFL everybody's, you know, 250, 260, mm-hmm. and they're putting a hurt on you. Well, yep. Williams doesn't seek that out, but he can run through contact when he has to. And even though he's a bigger back, he does have speed to pick up chunk runs when he gets to the outside. And he was a staple in Carolina's passing game where he caught 25 balls for 305 yards this past year. So he does everything, and I really, really like this skill set.
Yeah, and,
nice. Boys,
and
any,
Zach.
Yeah, go ahead, Tyler.
Zach, you have that, what is it, the catch rule J. Mike always would quote? Yeah, so, the Zach
yeah, so,
rule?
So, yeah, I like to look for guys who have at least a 20 catch season in college. And it's mm-hmm. not, this is not predictive. It's not something that, like, if a player has 20 catches, he's definitely going to be a pass catcher. But if you look at the NFL, it's not really a developmental league. And there aren't a lot of coaches that I think outside the box. And so they tend to take players that they've seen do something mm-hmm. and have them do that in the NFL. Because if your job is on the line, you want to know that a player can perform at the task that you're asking him to. And so I look for guys with 20 catches. And that's just a little check mark that says, okay, I think you can be a pass catcher at the next level.
Yeah.
Where would you like to see a good fit for him? What a team that you would like to see him land on?
You know, somebody asked me that today. I would love to see him in Seattle because yeah. I think he absolutely fits what they do, where he can be that banger between the tackles. But he also is good enough at catching. He's a better pass catcher, I think, than Chris Carson. And you saw Chris Carson be, I mean, I think he was like...
He was decent.
Yeah, he was like, I forget what it was, but it was like 16 points per game this year. Like, and last year he was an RB1. Mm-hmm. So it's that team where you can be a banger inside, but also get those touches in the passing game.
It's funny that you say that because my comp for him is Marshawn Lynch. Like, his ceiling is Marshawn Lynch. And I know Ray Garvin, he has him comp to Marion Barber, which is also a very good comp. Mm-hmm. And we all remember Marion Barber, who wasn't utilized in the passing game. He could pass catch, but, man, you met him in a hole, you are not winning that battle.
Yeah. Now, I have Javonte at number two. He is really, really close with Najee for me. Yeah, I have him as a very powerful runner between the tackles. He's not going to outrun every defender, but has the speed to break away. If the guy gets an angle on him, he can't be chased down. Has very good hands to help the quarterback in the passing game. He's very patient in the running game. He's willing to let the line get on their blocks, open up the hole before he tries to pop it. He runs with absolutely amazing contact balance, though. This guy gets hit on his hip. He's rolling off of it, spinning off of it, just shaking it a little bit. Amazing contact balance. Looks a lot like Kareem Hunt coming out of college with that contact balance. But my note for him is I think that Javonte Williams is who we actually want David Montgomery to be.
Mm. Yeah, and you see a lot of people.
He can run hard like David Montgomery looks like he can in you know, in like training camp clips and stuff. He's a better pass catcher than David Montgomery. He's got better balance. He's not going down on first contact. This kid's absolutely amazing. I saw small segments of some UNC games this year, and just every time I would see a UNC game, I'm like, man, this kid's really good. And then when I finally got to sit down and go through a lot of the film, I'm like, yeah, this kid's the real deal. I like him a lot.
Awesome. So let's get us to number two. We've mentioned his name a couple times already. It's Najee Harris from Alabama. You know, I think he comes in with the name recognition because we've seen him in Alabama now for a couple of years. He's obviously played in big games on national television. He was in the national championship game. So he's got a lot more exposure than Williams from UNC does. So I think that's going to sway a lot of people just because they're like, well, I've seen it. And the people that don't watch tape, like we all have leagues where people are more casual. Al, hi. No, Najee Harris is, again, you're splitting hairs, I think, with these two guys. But for what Zach said, like, there are some important reasons why he has him bumped up from him. So, Zach, give me a little bit of rundown on Najee Harris. You know, a lot of people will comp him to another Alabama back, like Derrick Henry, stuff like that, because of the size, the strength, and stuff like that.
Yeah, 6'2", 230. Like, he's a big individual. But I started off my film write-up of Najee Harris with roll tide, bulldoze tide, drive tide over an unsuspecting opponent, back tied up, drive tied over them again just to be sure. Whatever slogan Alabama decides to run with, Najee Harris is carrying the ball. And that was like he did everything for them all year, and with good reason, because Harris is the absolute definition of an all-purpose back. He's big. He's built to run inside. He moves not only with power but inertia. He carries defenders that he's met, you know, when he's hit, and it takes multiple defenders to get that equal and opposite force to bring him down. And he's also really agile for a big man, which is not something when you initially see him, you're like, okay, he's going to be that bruiser. He's going to get in the hole. But he can, make great jump cuts. He's elusive. He's got tremendous vision. You know, he'll make that mid-lane adjustment where all of a sudden there's a defender there, and he's like, oh, no, I'm over here now. Mm-hmm. And he even can get outside and is dangerous. He's got deceptive long speed, makes big plays. And is a great pass catcher. I mean, he had 43 receptions this year for Alabama, which, you know, for a back that size, it's tremendous. And he had 27 catches the year before. So he is another one of these. There are probably, depending on Gainwell and his weight, his size, there could be four running backs that I'm really excited about in this. I say excited. It's not as good a class as last year by any stretch.
Yeah. Right.
But there are some players to get excited about, and Najee Harris is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Tyler, thoughts on Najee?
No, I thought the biggest thing I saw from him is usually when you see a guy that size, you expect him to run a little more upright. And he actually has a very good low center of gravity. He's able to kind of bend and get down with pad level with the other defenders because he is tall for a running back. And I like to see that because Derrick Henry, my main worry about him was, I mean, he's running straight up. And if you hit him in the leg.
Like Eddie George style. Mm-hmm.
And that was my main worry. And Najee Harris, it's not so much. Yeah, I mean, he's 23 entering the league. People have a little worry about that. I'm not. He has low tread on the tires.
You're going to get 4 or 5 years out of a running back anyway. Exactly. Like, who cares?
Yep, yeah. Exactly. And he's a very good pass catcher, and he shows patience, and that was a huge difference from what you saw the other years. And he kind of learned how to be more patient and let this offensive line of Alabama to make holes for him. And I like the progression I saw out of him. I mean, last year we were looking at him at RB6 or 7. This year we're looking at him at RB1. So the decision to stay another year and learn actually really helped him.
For sure. Tim, what do you got on Harris?
Najee Harris, most complete back in the class, in my opinion. You look at that 6'2", 230, you're thinking Derrick Henry. I got him closer to Mark Ingram than he is Derrick Henry. The guy runs with good power. He's got deceptive speed for a guy that big. And let's not forget Mark Ingram in his heyday in the NFL had like 350 reception seasons almost in a row, mm-hmm. I want to say. And Najee Harris, for a big boy, can catch the ball, very good. He runs with amazing power, and he can create yards on his own. Zach talked about it. That first guy hits him, guess what? You're getting drugged for two until that second linebacker gets there to take him out. Runs with solid balance, has really good hands. He sees the field well. I like his vision a lot. He has all the tools. He can make jump cuts, spins, stutter steps, hurdles. In my opinion, he should be the first RB off the board in the NFL draft.
Zach, hurdles. Let's hear about that.
that's the only negative or one of the few negatives that I talked about with Najee Harris is I hate that hurdle. Mm-hmm. I hate him going up because he is so athletic and he gets into that habit of trying to leap defenders. Mm-hmm. If you get in the NFL and somebody decides, nah, I'm going to stand up, that causes a lot of problems. That could be injury. That could be fumble. Like, there's a lot of things.
You might not have kids in your future.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a play, I think it was 2 years ago, when Saquon had the high ankle sprain, where he had a hurdle into the end zone and he landed poorly. And initially I thought it was knee. I thought he was done. You know, that sort of thing can happen to anybody. And Najee Harris puts himself in peril doing that, you know, hurdling defenders an awful lot. Oh, I hate it.
It's funny that you mentioned Saquon because I think his ACL injury, he did make a hurdle-like move, and then
he kind of didn't regain his balance, and that's what caused his ACL.
Yeah. Yeah. Zach, where do you got Najee Harris, the perfect spot for him in the draft?
No, anywhere. He's not a player that I think doesn't fit a team. It's whatever team takes him in the first. I think he'll probably go in the second round pretty early. But in the first three rounds, you're looking for that capital, and you're looking for a place that doesn't have a great receiving back. Because if they don't have a prototypical receiving back to put in a committee with him, he's one of the few players in this class that could get in there, and you could see a 50-plus reception season plus the bulk of the workload, which puts you in the conversation for being top five. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That would be
beautiful.
I want to say, anybody who's listening, when we say the Jets, that's actually a good thing now. The coaching staff they have surrounding that team is very good. So when we say the Jets, it's actually a good thing. And they have a bookend left tackle in Mekhi Becton, who's bigger than all three of us combined.
He's a bus. So let's move on to number three, Zach. You've got Kenneth Gainwell. Now, we've got Memphis just dripping talent. We've got Darrell Henderson. We've got Antonio Gibson. We've got Tony Pollard. Now we have another Memphis. What is in the water at Memphis at the running back position, Zach?
Well, it's a tough thing to evaluate, though, at least for me, because Memphis does such a good job opening up holes, and they're not playing necessarily the greatest competition. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those places that you need to be really careful about evaluating running back. It's a little bit like Oklahoma was, where you had Samaje Perine and you had Mixon and you had all of these backs coming out, and you're like, it's not quite the competition level that you're used to seeing in like the SEC or that, you know, those type of schools. So Gainwell, not only difficult to evaluate because of the small conference and them really doing a good job getting people lots of space to run in, but also he opted out of the season this year. So he took the 2021 season off, and not to avoid injury, not to bump his draft stock, but because he had four members of his family pass away. And so it's a tough evaluation all around. Mm-hmm. But for me, watching Gainwell from his sophomore season at Memphis, he rolled up over 2,000 yards, all purpose. And even though he's a little bit undersized, I have him at 5'11", 191. I've seen him as low as like 180-something. Hopefully he comes in a little heavier. But
hopefully he gains well.
That's it. He needs to have a couple of cheeseburgers in the offseason to get there. But he breaks or eludes a really large number of tackles for being such a small player. And what he does is when he gets hit, he really contorts his upper body to make it a glancing blow so the defender doesn't actually get a square tackle on him, and then he keeps going. And you combine this with his compact running style, he can be very effective carrying the ball inside, even though he's smaller. And Gainwell's real talent, though, is getting outside the hash marks. He's got speed to burn on the edge, and he's also fantastic as a receiver. I mean, he had 51 receptions as a sophomore in 2019 on top of his 1,400 rushing yards. So this is a guy who can do everything, and he's even comfortable going downfield. Like, there were multiple plays in his tape that I watched where he was making a back shoulder adjustment 20 yards down the field, mm-hmm. which is just mind-blowing for a running back. And so I really love that.
Tim, what do you have on Gainwell?
I have Gainwell as the next Darren Sproles. Mm. 2 inches taller, about the same weight. He is a absolute dual threat running back in this game. Zach mentioned it, and we saw it from Darren Sproles in his career in the NFL. He has that wiggle where even if you're going to make contact, he's going to move just enough where you're not square up. That helmet's not hitting that belly button. It's going to hit on the side of the hip, and he's going to be able to spin off of it. He's going to be able to juke off of it. Something. He's not letting you get the square hits. And that's even if you make contact. Because there's plenty of film out there where he puts the move on the guy, and the guy just whiffs. Just complete air. I mean, the guy's got the great lateral agility to keep just chewing up yards. And Zach alluded to this as well. Once he gets the outside and he's got that open field, good luck catching him. He's got that speed. He's a track star. He's got plus hands. He runs amazing routes from the slot, from the outside, out of the backfield. The kid can do it all. My only concern is the size. Again, I mentioned Darren Sproles. We saw it can be done, but we've seen so many of the cases where it doesn't work out. So the size scares me a little bit. The BMI is way, way low. If he spent this year doing the right things, working out, putting on 5, 6, 7 pounds of muscle, just a little bit of extra weight, and maintains that speed, I think the kid's got a really, really good shot to be a playmaker in the league.
Tyler, what you got? Sounds like a replacement for James White to me, but that's just what I'm thinking as you guys are talking.
That's a great comp. Yeah. And honestly, he's RB6 for me, but he's in tier two. So I have three in the tier one, three in tier two, and he's in my tier two. So yeah, I like everything. Right. And the size is my only worry. I agree. And the year off, and I want to see what he comes back like. I mean, losing four people is rough. I mean, we can't avoid that. And hopefully, you know, he's in good spirits and I wish him the best. And I want to see how that kind of, he comes out from that. I'm trying to say this in like the least mean way possible. And it's tough. Like I can't even imagine. I would fall apart. I'd probably gain 50 pounds in like bad weight.
Yeah, well, let's hope he's focused on his future in the NFL and he has a good pro day and goes from there, you know, wishing him the best.
That's what those loved ones would want for him.
Yeah.
That's right. So let's go to number four. This was a name that was hot in the streets for years, but I've seen, as I scroll through Twitter, which I normally do, I'm not much of a poster. I input, I'm a sponge for information. And this guy at number four once was the belle of the ball in this class. You know, he went back to school for a year. Now he comes out. It's Travis Etienne from Clemson. And the more and more people that watch his film that I trust, the more and more people don't like Travis Etienne as much. I've heard a lot of Tevin Coleman-esque type stuff. Ooh. Now, I haven't dug into it yet, but I've seen... This is only what I read, and I remember because, like I said, I'm a sponge.
You're just reading my text.
You've got Etienne at... yes. So, Zach, you have Etienne at four. Give me some pros and cons on Travis.
I do, and don't take him being ranked at four as a negative, because I do think that he is one of the backs in this class that could be productive for your fantasy team. But, you know, I think that there are negatives to Etienne's game. I think that there is still room to grow for him as a pass catcher, even though he was much, much better this past year than he had been in the previous three. He caught 48 balls, and not only did he have 48 receptions for 580-something yards, he also looked a little better catching the ball, although there still is that second and a half between when the ball leaves the quarterback's hands to when it gets to Etienne, that he is scared. Like, there's no other way to put it. He is looking around. He's trying to figure out if he's going to get smoked from, you know, with the linebacker.
Yeah.
But I don't think that there is a better home run hitter in this class than Etienne. And he's done it on the biggest stages. Clemson is always in the college football championship discussion. And look, Etienne accelerates just instantaneously, and if a defender takes a bad angle, and sometimes even if he doesn't, it doesn't matter. Etienne is gone. You're chasing him to the end zone, and he's okay inside, but that's not where I want him. I want him getting touches outside on the edge. He's deadly out there, and you can now get him in space as a receiver. So it's really funny because the three most difficult running backs to evaluate in the last probably four classes have been Kerryon Johnson, Ronald Jones, and Travis Etienne. And they all do a lot that is very, very similar. But the upside for Etienne is he's improved as a receiver more than either of those other two have. And so I think that is where, you know, I could see him, if Gainwell comes in at 190 pounds, Etienne is going to move ahead of him. For me, he'll be my running back three in this class. And I think that if a team gets him, uses him as a pass catcher plus with efficient touches. So you're not running him into the line 25 times. I don't think that's going to be beneficial. I think if you get him 10 to 15 touches in space where he can use his speed, you're going to see fantasy production, and that's what I want out of ETN.
Ooh, an Aaron Jones replacement.
Yeah, could be.
Wait, what?
I mean, the system you want him in is LaFleur's system, the outside zone system. That's exactly where you want him. And I love that. I mean, that's a perfect fit. I'll just go right into my notes, Tim, if you want me to. I mean, he's a smaller back, but I love the thick lower half.
Wears orange single-digit jersey.
First name Travis.
Automatic pass. I had Travis Fulgham once. He was bad. Travis Kelce's pretty good, though.
No, and we all know Katie Flower and her evaluation of running backs, and she wants the bigger lower half for the center of gravity. It kind of puts my worries away with how small he'll weigh in at. What, Zach, do you think, like 200, 205?
I mean, I get him at 5'10", 215, but how they like to squeeze a little bit extra in. But, like, he's bigger than you think he is. He just runs smaller.
That's like Dalvin Cook size.
Yeah. ESPN has him at 205. I'd expect that he's probably going to weigh in at about 212, 215.
Okay. Yeah. Now, and I do think he likes to push it outside. When they do make him run inside, it's one cut outside. Well, not cut. He'll just kind of curve to the outside, because that's my worry.
Is that Marlon Mack?
That's my worry, is he can't cut. Like, he's got hard, like, I wouldn't say it's Tevin Coleman bad of elusiveness, because Tevin Coleman, if you remember, he tried to juke Anthony Barr, and he just literally moved his shoulders like an inch to the left, and Anthony Barr just stripped the ball from him, which was hilarious because that was my worry with Tevin Coleman. But it's not good, and it's kind of, it reminds me of Lamar Miller when he came out of Miami. That's because Lamar Miller learned the jump cut when he was with the Dolphins. And Lamar Miller finally was like, oh, I've got this new weapon I can use. And it made him way better of a football player. Etienne is very young still. I think he still has time to learn the nuances of the hole, finding the hole and cutting in the hole. He has good patience. He's not going to beat a head-on tackle. I mean, you meet this guy head-on, he's not breaking away, but he does break arm tackles. He's got that thick lower body, and the acceleration alone will help you break these tackles, because I agree, Zach. His acceleration is elite. I haven't seen many people with this speed and acceleration of Etienne, which is why I have him locked in at 3 for me. I mean, if he lands on the Jets, which we've got LaFleur's brother on, who's going to run this outside zone, which people have had Etienne mocked to, wheels up. He's going to probably produce big time with that team. And yeah, Etienne, I was lower on him when I first started watching, and the more I think about it, it's very system dependent for me. But if he lands with the right system, he's going to be a very good fantasy producer.
Tim, any last words on Mr. Travis Etienne?
Yeah, I believe he's going to succeed in the zone blocking scheme. He has shown the ability to soften his hands this year. He showed the ability to make some tough catches, but then he turns right around and he'll drop that easy one because he hears the footsteps. He's not very elusive, and he's playing behind that very good Clemson line that really might have helped him a lot. But dear God, if things are blocked up, good night. He's popping the long one. It's off to the races.
Nice. So let's get to number 5 here. We've got Jamar Jefferson out of Oregon State. 5'10", 216. You love those measurables. Only 20 years old. He's going to be 21 just before the draft. So, Zach, you've got him in the 5 hole here. Talk to me about Jamar Jefferson.
Yeah, and Jefferson really kind of popped early. So his freshman year at Oregon State, he had 239 carries for 1,380 yards, 12 touchdowns, also had 25 receptions. After that, it got a little bit scary. He had a foot injury, and then this past year with COVID, it was really tough to scout. But, man, he does a lot that I really like. He is, you mentioned, he's 5'10", 217, so he's got that prototypical size, and his acceleration is fast. I mean, he gets to and through a hole oftentimes before the first-level defenders even know he's been there, which is kind of nice because then you're in the second level and anything can happen. He's at his best when he can identify an inside running lane, make one cut to get there, and use his speed. So he's not the ETN get to the outside, but he's still that one cut kind of runner where you'd like to see him in a scheme that can open up a hole and say you're headed there. Because one of the drawbacks with Jefferson is he doesn't improvise very well. So when there's not a hole there and it's supposed to be there, he'll kind of stop and give you the like, but, that was supposed to be. I had a boss that used to be like that. This was supposed to happen. Yeah, well, it didn't. We have to figure out what's going on now. And so that's the real drawback, I think. And because he does this, he occasionally misses chunk runs to the outside because he's really hesitant to pop out there. And although he's not really a traditional space back, he is good enough as a pass catcher. He's got the ability to make adjustments on poor throws and maintain his momentum so he can transition back to a runner, which to me is really important when you're talking about a player like this. So he's one of the last players that I see that could be a three down back in the NFL. Not necessarily will, but could.
Tim, give me your notes on JJ. Or J squared, if you will.
I'm glad Zach brought it up because I have him a little bit lower in my film scoring because of the stops and starts. The stops and starts concern me. It confuses me at times almost. He's got very good top end speed and the ability to hit the home run. And he runs for tough yards despite not having just overwhelming power. When things are blocked up, the guy gets north and south very quickly through that line and through that hole. He reminds me a bit of James Robinson. He's James Robinson-esque, where if it's blocked and that hole's there, he's through it. He's not dancing around in that backfield. He's getting the ball, he's through the hole, and he's into that second level. But more than a handful of times, I'm like, what are you doing? You can't stop. You got to keep moving. And that really confused me. It really worried me. So I dropped him down a little bit there on my rankings, but yeah.
Where is he for
you? He's got the tools. He just needs to figure this out.
Where is he for you?
What's that? I have him at 17.
Wow. And running backs or overall?
Yeah. Running backs. 17 and running backs.
Okay. I have him at 5 with Zach. I love this guy. I watch the tape and I'm like, this is Marlon Mack. This is Marlon Mack. And Marlon Mack was a good running back before his Achilles just blew up. Now, he's an okay pass catcher, but his best skill is definitely his vision and speed in the open field. One of my favorite things is in the open field in the second level, he has patience to allow his receivers to come back up with him and block for him. I saw that multiple times where he could easily outrun the receiver, but there's a defender coming, but there's somebody behind him, so he kind of slows down, lets the receiver get in front of him, and then moves the other way and can get around him. I like that. I do think with how young he is, he can still grow. Like Najee Harris, I think we know what he is. He's 23. I think he's kind of locked in at what we are going to get from him. But when you're 20 years old entering the NFL, you still have some room to grow. And look at Ronald Jones. He came in super young. There's a lot of people that didn't think he was going to be the running back he was. We thought he was a one touch and he's down on the ground. You know what? Ronald Jones has shown power this year. He's changing his game a little bit. And I think with how young Jamar Jefferson is, I think it will allow him to kind of grow more as a running back and give him that time to learn. I kind of see him going in the third or fourth round in the NFL draft. And I think rookie drafts will kind of slate into the late second, early third, which is, in my opinion, a good value for him because I really like his upside. And if he can be Marlon Mack, a healthy Marlon Mack, I love it.
Yeah, and I think that's the caveat with like all of this. So these are my film grades. And so once you get to your rookie draft or once we have the actual NFL draft, things are going to change a little bit. But right, the reason why I do these early is because if Jamar Jefferson falls in the NFL draft, he's going to fall in rookie drafts, and then he's going to be of value because he's going to be a player that I saw early that I said, there are some traits that I really like. And so, I mean, like, I have, you mentioned James Robinson. So James Robinson was a guy we talked about last year on the Dummies podcast in February. like Mark Tape in February. I said, you know, I really like a lot of what he does, but it's a tough evaluation because I don't know how athletic he is. Small conference. Mm-hmm. He went to the combine and we're like, oh, okay. So he did that. Then he didn't get the draft capital. You're like, okay, well, we back off. But I got him in the fifth round of almost every rookie draft because he was still there. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you know, you set that machine in motion where Fournette gets dealt and then, you know, somebody else gets injured and then another guy gets COVID and all of a sudden it's James Robinson wheels up. It's a similar thing. And that's actually what I said. I said he could be a very interesting name to remember because if Jefferson lands in a fluid backfield, he can do it all. He just needs a chance.
Yep. Yes. So let's move on to number six, and that's Michael Carter, our second University of North Carolina Tar Heel on this list. You know, had a really good Senior Bowl week. He's out there to prove that he's a feature running back. Zach, do you think that that is in the range of his outcomes here in your number six spot?
I don't think he'll be a feature back. I think he can be one of those guys who comes in and can spell a feature back. So if there's an injury or if there is, you know, a window of time where a team doesn't have a feature back, he can do enough to be that guy. But I also think that pigeonholing him as a strictly scat back type player is a mistake because he did split carries in Carolina. Almost dead even with Javonte Williams over the past 2 years. And Carter is 5'8", but he came in at 202 at the Senior Bowl. So he's got a little bit of that BMI. You know, he's over that 30 threshold that people like to see. I mean, that's not my thing. I'm not a numbers guy, but I also pay attention to the metrics. And so that's a little check mark in that box. He runs inside with a really quick burst, and he's pretty slippery. And that's a... It's a word that I don't use very often with running backs because there aren't a lot of guys that run that way. But that was a Kareem Hunt word. It was the ability to get small through a hole and then come out on the other side and the defenders are going, where is he? And they don't get a real good grasp on Carter. And he's also really good at accelerating out of tackles. So when a defender thinks he's got him, Carter turns on the jets and gets away. And he's got enough speed to get the edge where he uses pace really well. So he changes speeds once he gets to the outside, uses jump cuts to extend runs. He's a very good receiver. He had 3 years in a row, 20-plus catches. So there's no doubt that he's going to be that guy. I think the problem is his quickness gets him in trouble sometimes, where he gets going too fast between the tackles and he runs up on his blockers. And instead of letting them kind of create a hole and you know, giving a perfect moment to strike. And, you know, although he's pretty good in pass protection, he sometimes is slow when he chips and then presents to the quarterback. And, that, you know, that's something he's got to get quicker at, especially if he's going to be that pass catcher plus that is one of those profiles later in the draft that I'm looking for.
Yeah. What do you got on Michael Carter, Tim?
Opening line, he is one of the more fun players to scout in this year's class at the running back position. He is a smaller back, very much like Austin Eckler. He's got about that same height and weight measurements as Austin Eckler, and I think that's a pretty good comp. Austin Eckler was not meant to be the three-down workhorse. He was meant to spell a workhorse type, and that's what I think Michael Carter can be. He is a smaller back, but he does a little bit of everything. At UNC, he was on the special teams. He blocks, he receives, and obviously plays running back. I wish he showed a little more patience. Zach said it. You see him, you know, you're like, hey, if you wait another half a second there or just one more beat, I think that hole's there. I think you just kind of ran into your guard's butt cheek there. He has that plus speed and really good open field vision, but for me, the agility is the calling card. You know, if he waits for that hole's there and he gets to that hole and that linebacker's stepping up to try to meet him in that hole, he's going to shimmy and shake him. That linebacker's not going to get that clean hit. And more often than not, he's on to that third level where now it's the safety's problem.
Tyler?
I'm just going to go with what they say. My comp is Eckler. So Tim nailed that one.
Boom. There you go. So let's move on to number seven. We've got Kylan Hill. Really interesting case. You know, he opted out on the season. Took a stand about the flag in Mississippi. And ended up being a big impact on changing the state flag, which is pretty awesome. So that's just a little side story about Kylin Hill and kind of give you an idea about this man's character. You know, he's got one season of really good production. Zach, I'm interested on him because I think he's a, not to put the word sleeper on it, but a very interesting case to get a running back a little bit later in a super flex draft whose talent I like. So talk to me about Kylin Hill.
Yeah, spot on. He's 5'10", 215, and had a season a couple years ago where he carried the ball 240 times and was a capable pass catcher. And so you've seen him be a quote-unquote bell cow as a junior at Mississippi State. And Hill is decent running inside. He can get outside on stretch plays. He's usually able to avoid initial contact with a really nice jump cut or a change of direction. He feels like he's smaller, though, than 215. And he lacks that real power, I think, to be truly effective inside. To me, Hill's strength is his ability in the passing game. And not just that he's a smooth receiver, but also, again, that transition. He goes from being a receiver to back being a runner post-catch really, really quickly. And once he's got the ball in space, you know, it's very, very dangerous. I think that the drawback, though, is he falls into this trap where if he makes a mistake, he tries to atone for it on the next play. So if he misses a hole inside, the next play may be a stretch play to the outside, but he tries to hit that same hole he just missed, and that gets him in trouble. And again, the athleticism, trying to leap defenders, knock it off. Enough with the hurdling. It'll get you on ESPN, but it's also going to get you on the IR.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Tyler, what do you got for Kylin Hill?
Yeah, I mean, he's been a Debbie favorite for years and years, and you listen to the big-name guys like Travis May and all them talk about Kylin Hill being a big name coming up. And he kind of fell in 2019, 2020. He worked his way back up. And I agree with everything Zach said. I mean, I listened to their running back review with J. Mike, and I was just ecstatic that you guys had him there because he's in my top of tier three, I think. And if he lands in a place where he can become that back, become the every down back, I mean, you're going to be able to get him mid-third probably in this rookie draft, depending on what round he goes in. And that could be a huge steal. I mean, we all talked about Antonio Gibson finding that or the James Robinson. This guy could be it because of the hype he had as a Devy asset. And that's another thing you got to remember. When you guys, that's the best thing about playing Devy is you guys playing Devy have these like, okay, these guys were a five-star recruit. That matters to me because it shows athleticism and kind of how much these colleges want him and how good these guys were coming into the college game. So Kylin Hill is one of those guys that I'm keeping my eyes on throughout the whole process. But I agree.
Tim, anything to add on Mr. Hill?
Yeah, Kylin Hill was a four-star recruit according to 24/7. So very good high school profile there. He has very good burst, really solid speed. I think he does lack power, and I have questions about his vision as well. His lateral agility isn't a huge factor of his game. And as Zach said, you see him try to atone for missed mistakes. I see him trying to bounce a bunch of runs to the outside, trying to pop a big play when it's just really not there. And if you just run it as designed, take that 3 yards, it's okay. Now it's second and seven. But instead, he's like, well, that's only 3 yards. I'm going to try to pop this outside. Okay, now it's second and 12 because you got tackled by that defensive end in the backfield. I don't like that he bounces a lot of them outside. But he had two seasons of over 20 catches. I don't have questions about his passing ability or his catching ability.
All right. Let's move on to number 8. This player has something in common with my former love, Kalen Ballage. Let's pour one out there. It's Jarrett Patterson from Buffalo, home of James Starks, the only other Buffalo running back I can think of that was even memorable in my memory banks.
He was good.
So, Zach, talk to me about... Talk to me about Jarrett Patterson. Is he just this 8-touchdown guy, or like, what do you see? I know Buffalo is probably a hard eval based on like competition and things like that. So talk to me a little bit about Jarrett Patterson.
Yes, certainly. And Patterson was one of the players that I'm really disappointed we're not getting a combine for. And normally, I'm not a combine guy. I don't necessarily hold a lot of weight, no pun intended, in the combine. But what I do like to see is the small school players. And if they are, you know, NFL caliber athletic playing against lesser competition, or if they're just good playing against lesser competition. And so there's a difference. So I'm still waiting to see a little bit of pro day, but I was really hoping to get a combine for Patterson. But to your question about whether or not it was just the 8 touchdowns, Patterson finished 165 yards shy of Buffalo's all-time rushing record, in spite of carrying the ball 230 fewer times than the guy who is the leader. So I feel like he'd probably get at least 165 yards and 230 carries.
Yeah.
He also picked up over 6 yards a carry, scored more than a touchdown and a half per game, and averaged 120 yards from scrimmage. So he's legit in terms of he is the best player in that conference. He's the best player at Buffalo. He's a little undersized, so he's 5'9", 195. You'd like to see him probably be around 205 at that size. So BMI Twitter is going to do some hand-wringing. I mean, he's like 28.8 or so, you know. But his smaller frame does contribute to bad habits. So he gives up ground sometimes when a defender gets in, past the offensive line. And when a defender does get that penetration, Patterson retreats, desperately tries to find a way to get out, and loses ground. You don't love that. Also, he didn't have a catch. I'm not even sure if he had a target this past season. And his pass catching is essentially a non-factor. Part of that can be attributed to Buffalo doesn't throw. But the other
part, it's like A.J. Dillon with Boston College. Like,
but
they just don't throw to
them. But I don't care why. So that's the thing. I don't do a lot with my evaluations. I don't do a lot of dreaming on guys. I do a lot of, this is what you do, this is what you didn't do, and so this is what I have. And it's the same thing when people are like, well, what about if he goes in the second round of the draft? I'm like, well, then I'll adjust. But I don't know that yet, so I can't add that information in. The things I do like about Jarrett Patterson, though, is he does not hesitate. He runs decisively. He's got great vision on the interior. He can get outside the tackles. He picks up chunk yards when he gets outside. And when Patterson is inside, he accelerates really, really quickly and keeps moving. And so that leg drive, that churn, is something that you like to see. He keeps himself really compact through traffic, uses really quick jab step cutbacks. And he does this really nice thing, and I mentioned this on a couple of podcasts that I've been on, but Doug, you'll know what I'm talking about, especially because the Patriots are coached to do this. He does that little half spin when he gets wrapped, so he can actually push himself forward, and the offensive line can help him without injuring him. He does that already, and so that's something that you really like to see, and he's great at the goal line. He's really good at getting low and finding a way to nose through an unimpeded path to get the score.
Tim, what do you got on Jarrett Patterson? I'm interested to see if you and Zach's views line up on this
one. It's pretty close. Our notes are pretty close. He's a short and stocky running back. I have him as a plus Mike Davis. He shows really good patience and moves laterally, waiting for blocks to develop, sometime to his own detriment. When the defender gets off the block, once he does see a hole, though, he has the quick burst to get north and south and wastes no time. He shows plus balance through contact and has decent power and decent agility for a man his size.
But the pass catching, man, the pass catching.
Yeah, I don't think I even remember seeing one.
No, honestly. I mean, like he literally had 26 catches in 3 years at Buffalo.
So damn you, like, canceled combine.
Yeah, well, 4 years. It didn't even come up on my notes because. If I did see one or two, it wasn't enough for me to say.
Yeah.
Shows soft hands, Tyler. Shows good ability to transition after the catch.
Tyler, anything to add on Patterson before we move on?
No, I can just give my comps. I have him as a poor man's Frank Gore. As like if he wanted to be a running back like that, that's what he could be, is Frank Gore-esque. And Frank Gore was a very good running back.
Yeah. He was a really good receiver there for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, top three all-time in rushing yards. I'd say he's pretty good. All right, let's move on to number 9. This is a name that a lot of people are going to be familiar with, that going into the class, a lot of people may have had him as a top three running back. You know, he had an outstanding season 2 years ago with over 2,000 rushing yards. I think he was the only other person to do that at his school was Barry Sanders. He was pretty good. So talk to me. Is it Chuba? Is it Chuba? Is it Chuba Hubbard?
Chuba.
Chuba. All right, I was right. So Zach, give me some ideas on Chuba Hubbard, who I like as a talent, and I think again a lot of these running backs in this class, while not rock stars, are going to be great values in our upcoming rookie drafts, I think.
Yeah.
So talk to me about Chuba.
Chuba Hubbard has probably got the potential to be the biggest value in this entire class because everybody is off him, myself included, because the wheels absolutely fell off this past year. The year before, he had over 300 carries. He had 2,000 yards rushing. He had 23 catches. So everything that you wanted to see. But he's 6'1". 207 and runs a little bit small sometimes for a player that big. Hubbard succeeds outside the hash marks where he can use his speed, and he does have speed to burn. He accelerates really quickly, can cut at full speed, which is something that not a lot of running backs can do, and he uses this really subtle like slide step cut to cut at full speed. And Hubbard is one of the better pass catchers in this class. He nearly always gathers the ball away from his frame. And that's one of those things that becomes important when you're catching the ball in traffic, because first of all, a defender can get their hands in if you're letting the ball travel in on you. But also, if the ball hits you in the chest, there's a really good chance that it pops up.
Going up in there,
yeah. Yeah, that's a really bad sign. So he's really good hands catching once he's got the ball in space. Obviously speed. Chuba's got really good elusiveness. And, you know, although he's not great running through the tackles, he does get to the hole quickly when it's open. And so, like, he's not going to hurt you inside. When there isn't a clear running lane, though, things come apart. Hubbard plays small, easy to bring down before he's gotten up to speed. And the other thing that I don't love is it seems like every play he's trying to score without being touched. Like, this isn't two-hand touch. This is not the Thanksgiving Day game, you know, at your grandma's house. This is going to be the NFL, so guys are going to hit you. You're going to have to take those 2-3 yard gains instead of trying to break one off for 50 every time.
Tyler, I feel that you have thoughts on Chuba.
I do. I actually went in thinking I was going to kind of be disappointed in, because I've seen him before. He, you know, before he reminded me a little about Kerryon, an upright runner, had some athleticism. But honestly, I came in very, very shocked. He's as athletic as anyone in this class. He's an Olympic runner. He's got Olympic speed, so he is very fast. He's an all right pass catcher. He's not great between the tackles. That's what I have in my notes. It's just like Zach said. I mean, if there's somebody there, he kind of sits there and goes, oh, now what? And he tries to use his athleticism to push it outside, and it doesn't work out so well because he is brought down very easily with arm tackles. Honestly, you're not catching him in a foot race. Him and Etienne are two runners that, if they're in the open field, good luck. Like, I would not want to be in charge of chasing after this man. He is very fast. And my last note is, if he lands in the right place, he is easily the biggest steal in this rookie draft.
Yeah, I've got something nice. Similar where you know, he's probably not going to start out with control of a backfield. But, man, he's one of the few guys who's got that pedigree that he could take one over.
Yep.
And if you're getting him in the, you know, third round of a rookie draft, yeah, fire that one off.
Yep.
Tim, anything to add on Mother Hubbard?
Mother Hubbard has speed for days. You put him behind that zone blocking scheme, let him pick the hole, and just watch him go. He shows very good patience behind the line of scrimmage, waiting for a hole to open up, and hopefully it does. Otherwise, he's going nowhere. And for a man of this speed, his footwork is impeccable. His ability to make cuts and change angles at top speed is absolutely amazing to see. He is a home run hitter, not an every down guy. And then my last note, I went back in and put a secondary note on this, and this is nitpicking here, but there are plays where he's got to the outside, he's got that clear lane down the sideline, and he's got the ball on the inside, on the inside hit. Just switch arms, bud.
Yeah.
These guys are going to punch these out, and if they punch it out and it's on the outside arm, guess what? More than likely, it's going out of bounds. Mm-hmm. If it's on your inside arm and these guys punch it out, it's probably going to stay in bounds, and you're going to have those turnovers. So I just didn't like that. I saw it more than a handful of times, and it's just like, that's just, it's a little tiny thing.
Come on, coaches.
Gonna get coached, yeah, it's going to get coached out of him, I hope, but it's just one of those things I don't like to see.
Absolutely. So let's get on to number 10. We've got Ramondre Stevenson. He is from Oklahoma. Big boy, 6 foot, 245-ish. Zach, talk to me about Ramondre.
Oh, he's slimmed down now, Doug. He's 227. Ooh. He's been he got on that diet, you know. He's been keto, and I don't know, but he is
some intermittent
down.
Fasting maybe.
But he's a funny one. He's the pride of Cerritos College, the Fighting Falcons, and that JUCO. He spent 2 years there. His second year at Cerritos, he ran for 2,000 yards, and then he ended up at Oklahoma. And he was behind Trey Sermon, who I think we'll probably get to, and he was also behind Kennedy Brooks for a season before Sermon transferred. Brooks opted out of this season, and so Stevenson got a marijuana suspension, because that's what you do when everybody in your backfield goes away. You get suspended for the first six games of the season. So it was a little bit of a rocky start, but we got there. It's really, to me, watching him, it's impossible not to be in awe of how well Stevenson moves for a man of his size. And it got even better this past year, as opposed to the first year he was at Oklahoma. He lost that weight, and he became even more powerful and deceptively quick as a runner. Stevenson's got really good contact balance, and he's so big he's able to take a square hit, maintain his footing, and kind of reframe his running lane, and then keep going. So he's one of those guys who can take an absolute beating and just be like, yeah, I'll shrug it off and go. And that's especially valuable to me at the goal line. And you also saw him actually be a pretty good pass catcher. He caught 18 balls in six games this year. So I know that didn't hit the threshold, but you also saw, you know, him be able to make that outside the tackles. To me, he's really good at using pace. And what Stevenson will do is defenders will underestimate his burst. And so he'll slow down, and the defender's like, I got him now. And then he'll hit the jets. And he's just quick enough to get by. The problem is sometimes this gets him in trouble, because if a defender is not deceived by his hesitation, Stevenson is just kind of stopped and either gets hit or run out of bounds. So there's some kind of tightrope walking with that, playing with pace. Man, he's exactly what you're looking for if you're a scout, where you're like big, fast, like all of those things that you can eye test. So we'll see how the NFL buys into him. But if they do, I mean, nice. If not, he's going to be a guy who gets lost in the shuffle for me.
Gotcha. Tim, anything to add on Mr. Stevenson?
Stevenson's a downhill runner, good route runner, and he blocks pretty well. You know, Zach brought it up. He only caught 18 passes this year, but in the limited sample size, I think he shows out well as a pass catcher. I do like the fact that at the lower level, he just absolutely dominated. I mean, you want to see that guy that, if he's going to have to play at the JUCO level, just absolutely crush the competition. Because if he's not going to crush there, and then he just happens to come, like, you know, let's say he was middling at a JUCO level, somehow made it to Oklahoma, a bunch of guys got in trouble in front of him or injured, and then he makes the field and he puts up a decent season. That's probably because the team was doing something and not just him. But yes, I want to say what he weigh in at the Senior Bowl at, like 227.
227.
Yep. So yeah, 6 foot, 227. He's probably going to run 4.5, somewhere in there. And so for a guy that size, that's good enough speed for me.
All right. Let's move on to our next number 11. We're almost wrapped up here. We've got Javian Hawkins. I remember this kid because he absolutely destroyed my Florida State Seminoles. Thanks for that. Mm-hmm. With a 3-touchdown game, he went for like 155 yards. Absolutely crazy. He's another one that opted out of the 2020 season, but he was having a nice little season, improving on a lot of his metrics over 2019. Catching more passes, he caught 16 in 2020 versus only 4 in 2019, based on the amount of touches that he had. So things were looking up for him, and then he opts out. Zach, talk to me a little about this. He's a little smaller. He's 5'9", but I like him.
Yeah, it's another one of these. Like, this class, and I said this when I started to scout, is there are about five guys who are just too small. And if they were a little bigger, you'd be really excited about this class. As it is, I think we're going to be just a touch disappointed. But at 5'9", 196, Hawkins is incredibly quick at the point of attack, but he's also a crease runner. Needs really just a little bit of space to open up for him to get to and through to the second level. And look, Hawkins is sub 200. He actually can run inside the tackles. It's kind of the Devin Singletary conundrum where I don't know if you remember watching him, but you're like, he should be a guy who gets outside and is a pass catcher, but he was an inside runner. And the same thing is true for Javian Hawkins. When he does get the edge, though, man, he uses his long speed, breaks off plays. I'm sorry to bring that back up, Doug. I know that you saw him do that, but like that's a thing. Unfortunately, yeah, that speed and quickness doesn't make up for some of the flaws in Hawkins' game. His vision is pedestrian at best. It's really average. He often misses cutback lanes, ends up in a sea of defenders, which is not something you're looking for in a smaller guy. And he also has a habit of carrying the ball in just one arm through traffic, which getting it away from his body leads to ball security issues. I know that he didn't fumble up until this year, but he had 3 fumbles in 8 games this year because of that. And look, it looks like he should be a lock for receiving work, but he hasn't done it. He had 21 catches at Louisville. Yep. So like, it's not a player. He feels like a guy without a position to me.
I like it. Tyler, what do you think about Javian Hawkins with your beautiful My Little Pony mask that you're currently wearing?
I thought we had another guest.
I'm Twilight Sparkle.
Beautiful lashes, by the way.
I'm Twilight Sparkle. I like parties and friendships. Javian Hawkins, he's a loud cutter, which means he plants super hard when he's cutting. It's like he's in like a...
Plant hard.
It's almost like he's in the production of Stomp. That's kind of what it's like. He's got good balance. He's not much power, but he uses his motions to kind of counteract the defense. So if he's getting tackled, he will use his elusiveness to kind of not get hit as hard or be able to break that tackle. He has a great first move. And this is my last note. He has a great first move. And then it's almost like in a video game where you need to recharge to make another effective cut. So he'll make a cut, and then it's like, hold on, I got to wait at least 3 seconds to make another legit effective cut. That's what I have for my last note on him. I thought that was hilarious because I like to play video games, and that was like my first thought was like, oh, he's got to let that baby recharge before he can do that finishing.
I like it. Tim, anything to add on Mr. Hawkins?
Small speedster. I see lack of power. We'll need to work on his blocking before an NFL quarterback's going to trust him in that backfield. But when he does get a crease, it's goodbye. He has very, very good speed. Lateral ability is not what most smaller guys show.
All right. Well, let's move on to our last in the list, and then we'll kind of do like a little lightning round of any other interesting prospects that we want to mention before we wrap up. But number 12, this is a name that a lot of people know because they saw him on TV. They saw him when he was with Oklahoma. They saw him run roughshod. He's like, oh, he's Marshawn Lynch 2.0. It's Trey Sermon, who I think is a super interesting, you know, this is going to be an interesting draft capital type of player. I kind of like what I see. I also see, like, I don't know, he's very...
average is what you want to say.
Polarizing, I think, is what I'm looking for from a prospect level. So, Zach, give me your sermon on Trey Sermon.
So, I love this type of player. I love the type of player that gets a whole bunch of hype because they were on national television and everybody saw him. But it's a player that I don't like because that pushes somebody down that I do. And so, I think you're going to see he's not a pass catcher. He's just not. And so we just saw Derrick Henry come in and have the third best season in NFL history rushing or fifth best season in NFL history rushing the ball and finished third in PPR, like 80 points behind Kamara. And now you're bringing Trey Sermon in who doesn't catch the ball. I'm not really that interested. He's big. He looks the part. He's best on stretch runs when he can get the edge, picks up speed really well. Can use a slide cut to change direction without losing momentum. But Sermon runs inside like he's trying to park an Aston Martin. So like he slows down and waits for that double wide space to open up. And it works in Ohio State because they have a really good offensive line. But it's going to be an issue at the next level. And to me, he also recoils from contact, often losing ground instead of, you know, driving forward. I think that he'll probably, Sermon will end up victim to the current, there's an oversaturation of running backs right now. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of good backs in the league. We've had 4 years in a row where we've had a bunch of legit NFL backs. I think it's going to be tough for him to find a place, especially because his limited pass catching skills. He's going to need to land on a thin depth chart and catch some breaks to be a producer for your fantasy team. So he's not a guy that I'm in on.
Yeah, there's a gluttony of talented players, not only at running back, but wide receiver and tight end right now. There's just the league is as deep as it's ever been.
Quarterback, too.
Quarterback. The league is flush.
It's
with
a dynasty.
It used to be like, we have 20 quarterbacks that can play the NFL position. No, we got 34, 35 of them.
Yeah, two dynasty player, like having these classes we've had is like having a $200 gift certificate when you're 12 years old at Toys R Us, and you're just like, yes, it's on.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So, Tim, give me your analysis on Trey Sermon.
Doug, what was the word you used? He's polarizing?
Yeah. Okay,
my notes on him are polarizing. They're polarized. So here, nice. So here's my pluses for Trey Sermon. He's got good speed. He's got decent elusiveness. He's got good balance. He can block, and at times he shows good power. But here's the minuses. He took so long to grow behind that offensive line at Ohio State, which is one of the best in the nation. ? I think he's got good power, but then at times when it comes time to make the hit, he just looks to go to the ground. I don't know. Like there's plays where he wants to stick his shoulder in that guy's gut and push for that extra yard. But then, like Zach said, there's also times where he sees that linebacker coming as he's trying to get around the edge. And he's just like, I'll kind of slide down, take a glancing blow. And lower that shoulder, put it into him and roll off of it and see if you can't go for another 5 to 7 yards. Like, I don't know. He shows plays where I'm like, oh, man, he could be a really good running back. And then the very next play, I'm like, that's kind of garbage. So,
consistency. Yeah. Tyler, anything on Trey?
I am way off. I am not. This guy's probably not going to be on any of my teams. Super stiff lower half. I don't see any agility that you're seeing, Tim.
Same.
He's a good pass blocker because he's a bigger guy. I mean, he just puts his body in front. He doesn't have great power. It's okay power. He just won't overwhelm anybody. Kind of like what you'd see from one of the top backs, like Javonte Williams. You'd see him overpowering somebody. But, I mean, a man of Trey Sermon's size, you would think, would be able to do that, and he doesn't. Not even with safeties. He's got okay speed, and it takes him a while to get into full speed, and he's a long strider. For me, he's just not going to be on my teams because, like Zach was saying, in rookie drafts, he's going to have that name cachet and people are going to want to take him in the third. People are probably going to take him over Jarrett Peterson, and I'd rather have him. Like, I'm just not in on Trey Sermon. I just think he's a name.
Yeah, and in your casual type of dynasty leagues, that is something that you're definitely going to capitalize on because people are going to be like, oh, I saw him play. Mm-hmm. Like, he's great. And yeah, we all play in some leagues like that, let's be honest. We don't play in all diehard leagues all the time. So that wraps up Zach's top 12. But before we let Zach go, I want to know, give me some other names that you've got your eye on, or maybe like a super deep sleeper that you would love to be able to get drafted and maybe land in a great spot.
So I think that the next name, or maybe the only other name that I'm really excited about, is Elijah Mitchell out of Louisiana. And I think that, and I'm not quite done with his film, but what I've seen is really nice. The problem I'm running into, and I don't know if you've run into this as well, is because of this COVID year, I think that it was really tough for guys to get the cut-ups out in time. So I'm going through and doing like the plus 15 seconds on full games, which is fine, but it takes a little bit longer. So, but I do think Elijah Mitchell is a player who I said is really efficient, runs well inside. He's got really good vision, uses a jump cut to make plays. And I think that his biggest issue is he's really slow when he's trying to get to the outside. But again, he's another player as a sophomore, had 20 receptions. And then this year with the shortened season, he had another 16, has been a really good runner, you know, has been right around 1,000 yards each of the last 3 years. So he's a player, like I said, out of Louisiana, Elijah Mitchell, that I like. You know, what's really weird is 2 years ago, everybody was all in on Max Borgie.
Oh, God, I remember that
name. You remember that name?
Oh, man.
Everyone was like, yeah, oh, no, Washington Stanford, State. And everyone was like, oh yeah, he's going to be Christian McCaffrey. And he just, like, completely fell off the radar. Like, I watched, he had a back injury, but, like, I watched some of his tape, and I'm like, how are people in on him before? Like, teams are inviting Washington State to throw to Borgie because he can't do anything with it afterwards. Like, yeah, he had a ton of catches. He had 86 receptions as a sophomore, but, like, it's because teams are like, yeah, go throw him the ball. Like, have fun. But sorry, I just, like, that was a name that, like, I remember everybody was like, yeah, he's going to be CMC. And I'm like, I mean, like, pig mentally, but no, he's not.
Yeah. Nice. No, in pigs Tyler, leagues, any final I got offered him a ton.
Oh, really?
Oh, for,
yeah. So Tyler, give me any thoughts on the remains of this 2021
I've got
running
two,
back class.
I got two that I actually have pretty high, and that's Josh Johnson out of UL Monroe. He displayed good vision. He's got good balance, good patience between tackles. He's a natural runner. He knows where to go and how to create on his own. Decent pass catcher. And I'm just really interested to see what the NFL thinks of him as well. But I think he is a super deep sleeper. And one of my the funnest watch I've had in tape watching is Puka Williams.
Puka, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. I absolutely love Puka Williams. If he was just 20 pounds heavier, because he is a slim, slight man. Like, we thought
4.4 BMI.
Yeah.
Puka's like the Tutu Atwell of running backs.
Yes.
Like, because you're like watching Tutu Atwell and you're like, man, I wish he was like 5'11, you know, 180. And he's like 3'6", like, you know, 85 pounds. And you're like, man.
Puka Williams, though, major acceleration, good quickness. He's a home run hitter. NFL, I think if the NFL is really intrigued with him, I think they will find a way to get this man the ball, because if he has the ball in space, he is super dangerous. His agility is insane. I just think he could have helped himself with a combine, and hopefully his pro day is good, because, yeah, I absolutely love Puka. He's my favorite film watch.
If Puka's athletic numbers from a pro day are up there, he'll get a little more love. But yeah, that size is going to scare a lot of people off.
Sucks so bad. I think he'll weigh in at what, 175 maybe.
Yeah, it's not going to be pretty. Doug, I'll go next. I got two as well.
Thank you.
The first one is Khalil Herbert out of Virginia Tech.
Yes, I like him.
Khalil Herbert. I think he's probably the most polished blocker of the running backs in this class. He's got impressive vision behind the line, seeing the hole before it's fully developed, plus has plus balance on runs and can be the back that does the dirty work down by the goal line. Isn't going to outrun many NFL DBs if he gets through the line, though. I like him to be that power running back. He can be, you know, what New Orleans wants to put behind Kamara. You know, Kamara can get all the flashy plays, get all the big points. You got a pass interference, so you got first and goal on the one. Hey, Khalil Herbert's going to get in there, and he's just going to pound it right through the line and get you that touchdown. The other guy I like, and Zach brought up his teammate, is Trey Rogas out of Louisiana. I see a slightly more athletic Jordan Howard. He's got very good BMI. He's a plus vision and is slippery on first contact. He's not going to shake too many people in the open field or run away from defenders. But yeah, but anything less than a good solid tackle is not going to take him down. Another guy that, again, he can be that touchdown scoring type for you. He's no nonsense. He's getting up, you know, up and down through the field, north and south, real quick, and big guy.
Khalil Herbert. It's funny that you bring it up, because on my tape watch,
I really didn't have any negatives on him. It was mainly just like, he's okay at that. He's okay at that. He's okay at that. Yeah. He's a man of many attributes and doesn't really have any weaknesses, but he's not great at anything.
So it sounds like a way people were talking about Joshua Kelly last year.
He's not a master of anything, but he can do.
Like, he's not great at anything, but he's good at a lot. Yeah.
Hey, we need you to go get us this touchdown. I'm gonna go get you that touchdown. Hey, I need you to block that edge defender.
Joshua Kelly's a good comp. I would say that's pretty much spot on.
Cool. Go me. All right. So that is gonna wrap us up for the 2021 running back class. Zach, before we go, let us know where everyone can find you, what you're working on. You know, any kind of like fun mixtapes you're working on musically, like that's always fun to know. So give us your spiel before we get out of here.
Thanks for having me too. This has been fantastic. I am at TacitAssassin13 on Twitter. You can find everything I do over at the DFPN at work. It's the only at work in town. We're easy to find. And I'm knee deep in rookies right now. Like you said, I just dropped my top 12, film grades. We're working. J. Mike and I are working through. We'll start on receivers this week and work through those.
Hey, me
so we
too.
Got a couple episodes. Yeah, we got a couple episodes fun. That way. And you know, this is the time of year that I love. I feel like, you know, most of the in season stuff to me is a grind, and I know that's a little bit like taboo to say because. That's, you know, everybody's playing and everybody's excited, but to me, my fantasy season starts in December when I start, you know, looking at rookie film, and it goes until April or May when I hit those rookie drafts because that's where I build my teams. And so, like, this is the time of year where if you're going to come find me, this is when you want to do it.
Absolutely. So that is going to wrap us up this week. We're going to be back next week with those wide receivers. Tyler's going to be grinding film this week, as will Zach. So we're going to talk wide receivers, a very deep class. So I'm really looking forward to that episode. It's going to be awesome. So again, make sure you check out Trophy Smack. Use code DHHRING. Get that $60 free ring when you order your trophy, your belt, your grill. I'll have my trophy soon. Maybe I'll wear it on the broadcast. Who knows? But that's going to wrap us up this week. Thank you again for Tim, Tyler, and our guest, Zach. I've been your host, Doug. We'll see you next week on the Dynasty Happy Hour.